This is episode 430, dated Monday, February 16th, 2026.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be here with all of you today. This is episode 430, dated Monday, February 16th, 2026. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our sports spelunkers. We have a full panel right now. Let's start out with Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon, good evening from downtown Pasadena. And it's 51, and right now it's light rain, but a couple hours ago I thought I was in the tropics or maybe in Houston because it was coming down like gangbusters. But we're indoors. The intermittent leak in our ceiling in the hall has not started yet, so we're warm and dry.
It is about 37 here in New Bedford, Massachusetts. It's been cloudy most of the day. We missed another potential snow event. We're lucky about that, but it's going to thaw out a little more this week. Possible rain on a couple of days, temperatures in the 30s to low 40s. So we'll look it up. Reverend Michael Garrett.
Welcome from Missouri City, Texas, where it is. We switched the picture on you, Mitch. We have 72 and sunny outside, so beautiful day.
Okay. Don Wardlow.
Yeah, we had snow here last night in Jersey. Not much of it, but enough that I had a ride this morning, which was delayed because the driver had to wipe off his car and clear off his driveway. But it's marginally warmer than that now. It's probably in the 30s, like what you got, Bob.
Peter Alcho.
Good afternoon from Coos Bay, Oregon, where we might get snow here. Usually it's rain, but we might get a little bit of snow. So we are waiting for spring to arrive when all this will be over, hopefully.
And filling in for Luther King today, who won't be with us, Gene Johnson.
Good afternoon or evening to all of you. It is 51 degrees here in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, we get warm there. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer and editor. Thank you for what you do. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our shows. It is much appreciated. Our media sources, thank you very much for airing us when you do. And finally, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our programs for those people who want to look them up. All they have to do is go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcast. Click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
Want to say hi to Trish, who was our facilitator today, along with Brad, who was our streamer. And once again, I encourage people who are listening to Sports Roundtable to drop us a line. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you think of the show. We want to hear your comments about what we talk about. So in order to do that, please email bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. I'm going to take a quote away from Mitch here before we started the show, and in an email that I received from Mitch this afternoon, he emphatically pointed out it is baseball time. And he's right. It is baseball time. And Mitch, I want to start out by asking you this. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about a possible strike and perhaps the need for a salary cap in baseball. Well, my friend gave me a counter argument. He said, there's no way baseball's going to get a salary cap, because many of the owners are too greedy and they do not want to share the wealth. Do you agree?
Oh, I absolutely believe there will not be a salary cap, but the owners would love a salary cap, or at least most of them. probably Mark Walter of the Dodgers, Steve Cohen of the Mets, and Steinbrenners probably don't. But I think most of the owners do, but the players will absolutely not allow it. They're just not going to do that. And if you heard or read some of the comments the last few days from Manny Machado and the other one, the Philly first, well, Bryce Harper, they basically, you know, there's been criticism of the Dodgers, including from a couple of three folks on this podcast about spending. Well, Machado, who is not a fan of the Dodgers, he did not leave us under great circumstances. But he and Harper both came out and said, no, we don't need or want a salary cap, and the Dodgers, you know, all the spending is good for baseball. And Cohen echoed their comments as well. So, you know, I just don't think there's going to be a salary cap, unless the ownership, gives something away that they absolutely don't want. And I can't see that happening.
Do you think it's good for baseball to have some really big supermarket teams and then some really eensy beensy small market teams?
Well, I think the way you solve that problem is you force owners to spend at a minimum $100 million and maybe even closer to $125 million as a floor. But I'll repeat what I heard this morning briefly on Colin Cowherd's show. Baseball, having dynasties in sports is actually good for sports, not parity, because it gives people a reason to either love a team or hate a team. And emotions drive following. It causes people to watch games, either to root fervently for a team or fervently against a team. It's how Bob and Gene, people like me feel about the Celtics, let's say, or how Don or maybe everybody else here would feel about the Dodgers. The reality is that sports needs teams like the Dodgers, like the Patriots, like the Cowboys. Sports is driven by emotion. And so, I've come to think that in fact dynasties are good and aren't going to go away.
But what about the fans? How long are fans for these other teams who are not part of these dynasties? How long will these fans cope with all of that, though? Well, they want their teams to win too.
Yeah, of course they do, Bob. And the reality is, if there are any poor owners in sports, they should get the bleep out of it. Nobody who cannot afford, and I'm just using baseball as the example, no one who owns a team who isn't willing to spend at least $100 million in payroll every year has any right to be an owner. And the fans, the way the fans show their displeasure is by sitting on their wallets and not going to the games.
Well, that doesn't matter as much anymore. They want fan participation, but we've talked about this a lot before. The media impact for these teams, the television and streaming contracts, I think that has a lot to do with what the owners can do and how much money they make.
Michael, most of these owners are greedy. Except for seven or eight of the baseball franchises that do spend money, and I'll throw the Cubs in there, and you know, some other teams. The reality is that these owners are making good money because of what you said, because of the media, because of those contracts. They can bloody well afford to pay to get quality players out on the field. They just don't want to do it.
Exactly. And Jim Crane is a key example, because he does not pay the Astros players those huge long-term contracts. He gets what he can get out of those guys, and they all leave.
And yet they were a dynasty until, you know, a couple of years ago. Last year it was the Mariners beat them out, but they were pretty much top of the pop in the West for an awful lot of years, and they were detested by a lot of fans, and for good reason, but they were there.
A good 7 or 8 year run. A good 7 or 8 year run.
Exactly. But somebody was talking about fans in, they didn't name cities, but Kansas City and Pittsburgh and the White Sox, and my goodness, some of these Colorado Rockies, they are dreadful, and they're never going to be anything but dreadful.
Well, that's my point. How long should they remain dreadful before fans stop watching? And if fans stop watching, that doesn't help the sport.
And that's what they're going to do. And especially if we see a protracted strike in 2027,
yep.
I think baseball as we know it is finished. And I hate to say it. I never ever thought I'd have to say such a thing in my own lifetime. You know, I figured maybe I have a nephew who's about 20. I figured when he was about 80, then maybe baseball would be extinct, but it could be in my own lifetime.
A couple of weeks ago, I finished a book. It was about the sale of the Dodgers by the McCourts. Pardon me for cursing on a podcast. And the purchase by the Guggenheim Group led by Mark Walter. And Frank McCourt basically ran the Dodgers, and so did Fox before them, Rupert Murdoch. The way Michael's talking about Jim Crane, that he wouldn't spend money. They wouldn't spend money. And attendance, you know, we're a little nuts here in LA anyway. You know, they say all the nuts and bolts roll to the lowest, you know, lowest end of the place. But attendance was beginning to go down under McCourt.
Well, they were a circus act, him and his wife.
Absolutely. I mean, this book, it was called The Best Team Money Can Buy. And it went through the first year of Guggenheim, which was 2015. But you're absolutely right, Don. It was a circus. The divorce was a circus.
Was that by Sally somebody or other? I don't know the last name, but
I forget. I'd have to go and look at my book list. But
or Molly, possibly, because I think I've got that in my stack. The best
book. Molly. She was a report. Yes, really good book.
The best team money can buy. I want to get hold of that.
What you're talking about now with the Astros and with the Pirates and a bunch of other teams is they're nickel and diming the team because they figure, oh, the fans, they obviously don't have a lot of belief in the fan base. They say, oh, you know, sucker born every minute. We'll keep the money, the costs, the salaries low. But the suckers will still come to our games, and that's
3 million. So, 3 million.
Yeah.
Mitch, let's include the Red Sox in that category too.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
they don't want to spend, and people are very upset with their front office big time, because they're not buying the superstars at all.
But I wonder. You know, we talked about the fans. 30 years ago, that was irrelevant. Argument to have. I'm not sure it's as relevant because I don't know how much owners make from fan income, fans going to games. I think more income comes from their network contracts or
Peter. Peter, if fans are watching the games on TV and see empty seats, that's not going to be something that gets them excited about the team. And oh, by the way. Those those media contracts are driven by advertising. They're mm-hmm. driven by commercials. And if people aren't buying the products that the that's driving the media revenue, that's going to have an impact on the bottom line too.
And Bob, I was going to say something too. You know, let's just say for the sake of argument that the Red Sox actually went out and bought the big players. Can you imagine what the prices for, you know, seats at Fenway would be? They're already expensive as it is. I don't know if too many fans would actually go out and buy those tickets if they had to jack up the prices for the seats in Fenway.
Why would they need to jack up the prices if they're already expensive? And we've bought superstars in the past. So it sounds to me like they're jacking up the ticket prices prematurely.
But Gene, I don't know. Do you know how many season tickets the Red Sox sell a year? That stadium, Fenway, seats what, 40,000 most?
Close 38, to it. About 38.
Close to it, yeah, yeah. 38,000.
What percentage of those seats, A, are bought by season ticket holders,
right,
and B,
a majority
are, or okay, and B, bought by not individuals, by but corporations. I have a dear friend who I go to two or three games a year with him. He works for a bank, mm-hmm. Right down the street from us, in fact, and they buy season tickets. More and more seats are filled by corporations, by big business, who give them to their clients,
right,
give them to their employees, and at least 30,000 plus season tickets are sold every year by the Dodgers of the 55,000. I don't know the number of corporate purchases. But we don't have a problem selling our luxury boxes, our suites. And I tell you, I've been in one of those suites. They're pretty darn cool.
That's what I'm saying, though. That would be a good enough reason if they started getting, quote unquote, you know, A-plus players, there would be a reason. That would be their reason,
yeah,
to basically jack up the prices.
Absolutely.
But Mitch, don't you feel like I'm hearing that the Red Sox are losing season ticket holders? Isn't there a danger when you don't improve your team that season ticket holders are going to leave?
Of course. It happened under McCourt. Absolutely. And when it starts hurting the bottom line, and when media doesn't want to, when advertisers don't want to sell their beer or their tires or their cars.
Their $10 hot dog?
Yeah. $10. Hey, come to Dodger that. Stadium. I'll buy you one for $18.
Well, yeah, I was going to say
ridiculous.
Concessions. That was my thing. The concessions.
It's $13 for a bottle of beer.
That's all?
They're out of the gate, those concessions. Yep. They are really high.
For the beer I buy, and it's not just at Dodger Stadium, it's also at the Coliseum. And I don't drink Budweiser. The beer I buy is $16-$17 at both places.
So what do you think's going to happen if there is a strike? What do you think they're striking about, and what will be resolved and what won't be?
Well, the players want more revenue sharing. They want more. The owners want a cap. I don't know what the other issues are. Those are the two big ones that come to my mind. I don't know what other issues may come up, but I'm sure there'll be a bunch.
Well, the other thing you alluded to it earlier, Mitch, when we started talking about the media contracts. Do you see a scenario where the media moguls decide not to play the game and pull some of those contracts, and how that might affect what the owners do? That could force them, if we have baseball, and I know you and Don are saying it might go by the wayside, but if the media execs decide to change the way they issue those contracts, could that force them to force the owners to have a cap?
I don't know, because I'm not sure whose side the media would be on. I suspect that the media moguls will be on the owner's side.
Yeah.
I don't know. The other thing that I'm kind of interested in this year is the AI umps. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I know we had it in the postseason and in the preseason, but I'm just kind of curious how that's all going to play out this year, to be honest with you as well.
It'll be interesting because I've seen all that's bad about AI. All you have to do is talk to your phone, get your phone to send messages, and listen to how garbled some of those messages come out and how totally wrong they are, how misdirected they can be. You can have your message to your girlfriend end up going to your wife. Well, you know, that's how AI works.
The other thing that's kind of funny about it is like, especially if you do it on Google, it warns you. It literally warns you at the bottom that we're not 100% accurate. And it's like, okay, well then, why make that statement?
Yes, YouTube does the same thing with their AI, such as it is. And believe me, I don't trust ABS. Not for 1 minute do I trust it not to go wrong.
You're conflating two things that have nothing to do with each other.
I know.
AI has nothing to do with the ABS system. And the thing to keep in mind is I support the AI. I support the ABS totally. The players who have come up through the minor leagues the last 5 years, who are now moving into Major League Baseball, have been in Major League Baseball for a couple of years, they love it. It is not going to be an issue. It's not a problem anymore.
Especially where all we've been hearing lately is much more criticism of umpires. I've heard more criticism of umpires the past five years than ever before.
Yeah.
I agree.
And that goes back to what they're teaching umpires today. Why are umpires making so many mistakes now more than ever? That's another thing. What causes that to happen?
Because they don't teach a uniform strike zone, apparently. And the other piece is, I learned a lot from Rick Monday this past couple of years. It depends on where the umpire positions himself. And it's easier if you position yourself in one place, you have a much better view of inside pitches versus outside pitches. High and low, that's also subjective. Depends on whether the player is in a crouch, is leaning over the plate. You know, it is subjective, and the one knock on ABS, and I trust that if they haven't figured it out by now, they'll get it figured out fairly soon. But the one knock about ABS, they had to figure out where the strike zone is going to be,
and from player to player.
From player to player, because players have different stances. Some of them are forget the height issue. The ones who bend at the knee, they're no longer from the ground to the shoulders or to the letters. Say 5'10", they might be 5'2". So you got to work that out.
I'll give you three. I'll give you three examples. Jose Altuve versus Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
and then the stance of Jeff Bagwell, who had a weird stance, so you couldn't always figure out where his knees were.
Mhm. Mhm. If they work that out, and I suspect they have figured that out, then people are going to be real happy with the ABS system. And do keep in mind that The number of times a pitcher or catcher or batter can question an umpire call is going to be severely limited right at this point. I forget, is three per game or something like that?
I think it's three, yeah. I am looking forward to it. I really am. So.
And also, the game starts Saturday.
Yep, first game for the Boston Red Sox, Saturday against the Twins. Can't wait.
Yep.
And the World Baseball Classic, by the way. A lot of these players who are supposed to be preparing, that's the key word, preparing for the regular season, are going to jump into the World Baseball Classic, play with full force, and God knows what will happen.
I'm really hoping Romy doesn't kill himself.
Anthony, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like the World Baseball Classic. I'm looking forward to hearing as many games as I can on Sirius XM.
And I think it's a great event, Mitch. Don't get me wrong, but the
No, I get it. Something just happened in the Olympics that is unfortunate. The LA Kings haven't been scoring many goals this year. And one of their top scorers, Kevin Fiala,
yes,
broke his leg, and he's out for the season. And that's not what the Kings need. They don't need one of their better scorers out for the season. But you know, that's the thing that you always worry about with the World Baseball Classic is somebody getting hit by a pitch, breaking an arm, and out for 2 months or some such.
And another Olympic calamity was Lindsey Vonn. She fell, and she not only fell, she had multiple fractures. Yep. She's going to have multiple surgeries, and this is
a
terrible thing.
Exactly.
And she's already had four surgeries.
Yeah. Gene, you're right. I hope nothing happens to Roman Anthony like that. I hope.
Yeah, because I mean, he's a young player. He just came on this year, you know.
Exactly.
So.
But Mitch, here's the difference between what happened during the Olympics and what happens at the World Baseball Classic. You already have a smooth flowing hockey season going on that's taking a break. With the World Baseball Classic, you've got players starting from scratch.
I know where you're coming from. And you know, I think it was you who mentioned last week or the week before, it shouldn't be at the beginning of the season. Well, the only problem with that, Bob, is if you have it at mid-season, that makes the All-Star break even longer than it is now, which is
about
essentially
November.
A week. If you have it in November, the only time that would work is if you permanently move the WBC south of the equator. It's winter time.
Here's
up
a
here.
Thought. Here's
it's
a thought.
It's winter time.
And everybody's gassed.
Yeah, but hold on a second, Gene. But isn't it just as cold in March as it is in November north of the equator?
No, not really. I mean, it can be in certain parts of the country, but it's really November, December, January, February are the coldest months of the year, at least up here.
I think statistically here in New England, we've had more snow in March than in November.
Mitch, you speak like an Angelino. I mean, I have done games in New Jersey. I have done baseball games in New Jersey in March and April even, and frozen my bottom off, not to mention my hands.
Don, believe it or not, and it's not been so much the last, few years, but I've been to the East Coast on a number of occasions in March, and I don't dispute what you're saying, but what I'm saying is, how many 60 degree days do you have on the East Coast in November? Please tell me.
Quite a few.
I don't know. I am for the whole idea of.
Yeah, go ahead, Gene. You were going to say something anyway.
I am for the idea of doing the World Baseball Classic during the summer. I mean, look, we already have that pause for the World Series, and it's only 1 week. So what? It's going to be 1 week more. I don't know. I personally believe that they should have the World, because I think it would turn more people onto it than during, you know, this time of the year, because so many people are listening to, you know, getting their brackets in for, you know, college basketball and stuff. So I think.
Gene, it wouldn't be one extra week. First
of
all,
I think it would be.
It's 2 weeks. The World Baseball, look at your calendar. Look and see how long the WBC is. It's 2 weeks.
The only way that works, and they'll never do it in a million years, would be to reinstitute Sunday doubleheaders. You do that, you get a nice break long enough to have a World Baseball Classic in July. But the union, the cussed union, will never reinstitute the Sunday doubleheaders we had when most of us were kids. Those were wonderful. You could tell your dad, okay, this is when the doubleheader is. This is when I want to go if you're available, you know, and please, 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 I want to go to that doubleheader.
Well, first of all, even if they reinstituted it, Don, they would do day-night doubleheaders with two admissions.
So what?
It's all about corporate greed. You're right.
Yeah.
Exactly, Don.
So the old days when the second game started a half hour after the first game, went the way of the dodo bird.
Don't I know it?
Two for the price of one. You don't see that no more. Anymore. No.
But that would allow for a World Baseball Classic in the midseason, but that'll never happen. They'll never go for it.
Basketball.
I was just going to say, I wouldn't like that because I don't even like the way the basketball goes right now. A whole week, 10 days off.
That's about a week.
I wouldn't like it. I wouldn't like that for baseball either. You know, two weeks off in the middle of the season.
The pitchers wouldn't like it. They'd lose control.
Look at hockey. Those hockey players that are not playing in the Olympics have 3 weeks off
in
season.
I really honestly think with the idea of the baseball season, so long as it is, I think it would be a really good way to at least break from that. Yes, you have to worry about your pitcher's arms getting cold, you know, but I don't know. My thought on it is, they should break it up.
The only way that will happen, and I support this as much as I love baseball, I would not have a problem with cutting 20 or 30 games off the MLB season.
There you go. So have a 140 game season and put the World Baseball Classic maybe. How about between spring training and opening day?
No. I like the idea of doing, if you're going to do that, do it in, July, for no other reason, because that is the most boring part of sports during the year. You know, the basketball playoffs are over, the hockey playoffs are over. You know, for me, July and August, is sort of the dead zone in sports. Except for baseball. The rest of it, golf, I don't care about. NASCAR, I don't care about. I would love something like that just as a fan. I can see there are all kinds of problems with it. I'm not here to argue any of that, but as a fan.
Peter, do you think though that would affect the rhythm of those players who are not in the Classic for all that time?
Well, it's no different from the hockey at the NHL or, you know.
Oh, yeah, I have the same concern for hockey.
Well, I mean, you know, strictly from a fan's perspective, for me personally, I'm always speaking for me, Peter, the fan, I would be much more, willing to watch. This national, international baseball thing. Well, there's not much else going on in the rest around in the sports world. Right.
I would be concerned about the players themselves. Now, Gene and Don, you might remember this. Wade Boggs, when he was a player, he was very upset during All-Star break because he said that affected his timing. And here's a guy that was batting .350 on a regular
season. I'm sure it did.
Okay. He did not want the break.
That's true. I was speaking for me as a fan.
I understand that, but I
get there are all kinds of problems with it. I'm not here to argue with any of it.
I mean, and then think about it this way, like, you know, a lot of your baseball stadiums, whatnot, they also do like, you know, concerts and stuff. They could use that time for ticket sales for like different events and stuff. My whole thought on it, it'd make more sense. It really would.
So, before we bring the participants in, Don, I think you have a basketball note for us.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the game. I'll try to work in a little men's, but there's some absolutely good women's basketball happened. Going back to last Thursday, Vanderbilt, which at the time was number 5 in the country, today the new poll came out and I didn't have a chance to look at it and see where they went. Thursday, they absolutely pounded Texas. I mean, the slogan is don't mess with Texas. Well, they messed with Texas all right. The final was 86-70 in favor of Vanderbilt. And for the fourth game in a row, their kid from New Jersey, Michaela Blake, scored over 30 points. Well, that streak came to a grinding halt yesterday when Vanderbilt went into Georgia and lost shockingly to the Georgia Bulldogs, 76-74. Those were the two games I was most focused on all weekend long, although Syracuse won an overtime game. No, they weren't overtime. They won 79-78 on a buzzer beater on the men's side of things. And BYU won a very close game, and Texas Christian also, both of those on the men's side. So it was some exciting action this past weekend on the hardwood.
Don, I thought about
the opposite for the Lady Longhorns, Don. They lost against Vanderbilt. They're ranked 4th. Now, and they won, I can't remember who, but they won.
They beat Tennessee yesterday.
They beat Missouri.
That was beautiful. I love that.
They beat Tennessee and Georgia beat Vanderbilt.
Yes, they
Don,
did.
I have a men's basketball question for you. I just ran across something. Arizona apparently lost 2 games in a row. So
yes, they have.
Being number 1.
Texas Tech.
But I'm hearing that Bronny's younger brother is even better than, well, Bronny isn't that good. He'll be out of the league in a year or two. But I understand Bronny's younger brother is pretty darn good.
I heard about
it. What do you know about him?
Somebody sent an article about that. I don't know if he plays for the Wildcats as of now.
Yes.
Okay. I thought he might just be a recruit that they were getting into. Okay. Well,
I think freshman with the Wildcats.
I did not hear him take part in the game against Kansas where they beat Kansas at the Fog Allen Fieldhouse. That doesn't mean he didn't take part. It just means I didn't hear it.
He might be a recruit, but it sure sounded like he was with them, but maybe you're right.
And I don't know at all about their second loss. I don't know who beat them, but they have lost 2 games. I know that.
Yeah, I heard and I've forgotten.
He's still new, I think.
The game that made me happy was Saturday. Michigan beat USC by 30 points about 6 weeks ago. So I'm listening to the UCLA-Michigan game on Saturday, and UCLA is making a game out of it. It was 40-38 at halftime. It ended up 86-56, Michigan, and I said, well, good, we both lost by 30 points. I don't feel so bad.
Now, is that on the men's side or the women's side?
Yeah, men's side. Men's
okay, because on the women's side, Michigan absolutely buried Michigan State in a game which 2 weeks ago, those same two teams met on February 1st, and it was overtime, and Michigan just barely beat State 94-91.
Yeah,
yesterday and didn't get it.
Yeah, the only thing I know about women's basketball out here is apparently UCLA is in the top 5.
Number 2 in the nation.
Yeah. So
and they're just demolishing everybody that they see. I'm looking forward to when they see either Vanderbilt or Connecticut in the NC2As. I don't know what round it'll be.
Well, if they play Connecticut, well, whoever they play, I'll be rooting for their opposition. So if it's Connecticut, I'll be with you.
What a game that'll be if UConn and UCLA got it on. But also college baseball. Somebody brought that up before we went on the air in our pregame. Tyce Armstrong, this kid for Baylor, and it's Tyce. T as in Tom, I-C-E. And he's a freshman, so remember that name, Tyce Armstrong. Dude hit 3 home runs, and they were all every one of them, grand slams. And I just had to think of Rick Riz, the man who, for the Mariners, says, get out the rye bread and mustard, Grandma. It's grand salami time. Well, those three grand slams, that was a whole deli worth of rye bread and mustard and salami. And they won 15-2, so he had 12 RBIs out of their 15 runs.
I remember the game. I was at work about 25 years ago when Sean Green hit four home runs and drove in 11. It was a day game against the Brewers.
Yeah.
Former Blue Jay.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw him as a rookie in Dunedin Blue Jays, and then later he was with the Dodgers and did that, Mitch. That was an amazing game.
Yeah, it was. Well, Sean Green, I don't think he gets enough credit. He was a really good baseball player.
Oh, yeah.
I thought about you the other day. The Missouri Tigers women's basketball team is awful. They've been awful for years, and they may, they're just awful. And they play Tennessee, who you always talk about losing, to this good team or that good team. And, I guess they're a good team, but they're not, in the top 20.
They're not what they were. They're Shamika Holtzclaw days and their Candace.
Right. Well, I'm talking about names. I'm not talking about, whatever, but,
I'm saying they're not who they were.
Right. But they beat Missouri by 45 points. So, you can just.
They had a big old chip on their shoulder, I'm sure, after some of the beatings they've suffered.
Well, Missouri's women's basketball team has always been awful. And I don't know when they're going to get their act together, but
except for the wonderful night they beat South Carolina, and really
that was an amazing game. Yeah, that was amazing. That was an extraordinary.
We got less than 20 minutes, Bob. You want to see if there are any?
Let's do that. So you're listening to Sports Roundtable, and it's time for our participation part of our program. Anybody that would like to ask us sports questions, doesn't matter what sport it is, we'll try to answer it for you. So Trish, do we have any hands raised?
We do not have any.
No.
At this time. No hands.
Sorry to hear that. Well, folks, let's get our hands raised and interact here. Trish, let us know.
We were
so interesting, or we put them to sleep.
we're just bringing up good topics.
We were briefly talking Olympics, and I thought it should be mentioned. The women's Olympic hockey team, we mentioned the men's, and they're going to have their quarterfinal either tomorrow or Wednesday. I'm not sure. But the women have absolutely demolished every opponent that they saw. They've been like the UConn Huskies of women's hockey. And they're going to play in the gold medal game, which is on Thursday. But I have no idea, what time or anything like that or what channel it'll be on.
Don, I will challenge your memory. Because the only women's hockey player whose name I remember, do you remember Tony Granato's sister? Tony was playing for the Kings at the time. Do you remember Granato's sister?
Tammy Granato. She's part of the NBC crew with Kenny Albert, who are doing the games. I think. I'm not 1,000%, but Kenny's on play-by-play. That I know.
Oh.
And on the men's games, he works with Ed Olchuk.
Oh, I remember him.
I want to go back briefly to the whole owners thing, and not just baseball, but all other sports. And, we talked about, those owners who would like their teams to win and do what they can to make that happen. And then the owners, we've mentioned a lot of baseball, and we can mention some in basketball and football too, who are, for one reason or other, just, completely utterly inept. Sometimes it's not spending enough money as, like the Pirates. Or the Rockies or the White Sox or the, what do they call themselves? The, whoever they are at this moment, A's. What distinguishes a good owner from a bad owner? And the other question I'm sort of pondering is, Mitch, your market ideas make sense to me. If you don't have a good media contract, ultimately you're going to lose more money. And all that. I wonder how much those owners really care. It's a bobble for them. They just want to have, I'm an owner of
a tax write off. there are two things.
Or a tax write-off. That's right.
There are two things that I think make a good owner good, and a bad owner bad. One, and this is not anything to do with money. Sorry, Michael. A good owner hires quality general managers and coaches and keeps his hands off the roster. That's number one. If you're going to hire a good general manager, he's the one who knows the players and the talent. Let him manage and keep off of it. And the other one is that you are willing to make an investment and you know, you're willing to pay what the market will bear as overpriced as all athletes are these days. And if you and I'm serious, there are, I forget how many hundreds of billionaires there are in the United States of America these days. But truly, if you're not willing to do that, then don't buy a team. There are guys and gals out there who can afford it. Let them be the team owners.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mitch. When you get in a run like the Pittsburgh Pirates is the team that comes to mind. You know, obviously the owner is getting something out of it. You know, I don't know what it is, but you think after the being as universally bad as they've been for the past 20 years, that the owner would say, well, maybe I'm losing too much money, or am I making money, or what am I doing as a Pittsburgh Pirates owner?
Here's something, gentlemen. All right, everybody's complaining, at least everybody who isn't in L.A., about the Dodgers spending $400 million on players. You know how much money the Dodgers made last year? Between $800 and $900 million.
Wow.
The rest by case.
No, your point is well taken.
Exactly.
Your point is
well
taken.
That's what I was going to point out. That's what I was going to point out, too. The owners are making money, even in the small markets. I know some basketball franchises are struggling in some small markets, but in most of these professional teams, basketball, football, baseball, hockey, from what I understand, the owners are still making money. Nobody's going bankrupt.
Yep.
And I mean, I kind of see the point. The owners need to make money, but I think out of all fairness, the thing that really just upsets me the most about it is the fact that you've got some baseball players who really don't have any incentive to be any better because they're priced so low.
There is that aspect of it, Gene. You're absolutely right. And those are the kinds of players I sure as heck wouldn't want on my team.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example of how money flows. The Houston Texans, first of all, they were complaining about the stadium. They wanted a new stadium, and I think they're going to be able to at least stay in this stadium until 32. But they just announced they bought some land, 83 acres or something like that. They're going to build a new practice facility, similar to what Dallas has done with the Star practice facility, retail, hotel, entertainment, you know, and they're going to get $150 million tax dollars to aid in the process.
I thought the Texas voters were smarter than that, Michael. When the Rams left for St. Louis, 30 years ago, it's because those of us who went to the polls in the city of Los Angeles, and maybe it was county money, we said, no way in you know where do we want to subsidize a multimillionaire owner building a new football facility, and we voted it down, and they moved, and so be it. You know, they're back now.
This is
I thought
second,
the Texas voters were smarter than that.
Well, this is second generation McNair. you know, Bob taught his son well, and but I think what the county thinks is that they'll get the money back from tax revenue because of all of the businesses that will go into this facility.
There's a book, and I can't remember the title of it, and I actually read the first couple of chapters and then stopped reading it. But the premise was owners are ripping off fans and hoodwinking politicians, but the reality is that municipal and county governments never recoup their losses, period.
And all the reports I've read about this in over the past 20 years or so, what you're saying is right. Taxpayers shell all this money and they end up losing money. All those jobs that they say are going to come in aren't as good jobs or aren't there or whatever. And just a comment, the Kansas City, Chiefs are leaving their stadium in Kansas City, Missouri and moving to somewhere in Kansas.
Yep.
Guess why?
Kansas City, Kansas. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
because
Kansas City, Kansas, because the Kansas folks decided to subsidize them with a whole bunch of money.
Right. The otherwise fiscally conservative, responsible Kansas legislature is giving them money.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I at the risk of veering a little bit into politics, Texas, I'll always, Michael, there was one year, I think it was 2004 or 8 or one of those years when Texas had a whole bunch of proposals to fund this and fund that, with tax levies or whatever. And they all failed except for one. And that was to subsidize the Dallas Cowboys in doing something. I can't remember what the something was, but whatever it was, that passed the Texas voters. And I don't criticize Texas. It's not just Texas who does this kind of stuff. I'm afraid that California, Mitch, or LA is the exception.
Well, I don't know if the Rams came to the city and county today, I'll stay out of politics. I will just say that the voters, at least in the city that I worked in for 34 years and lived in for 50 years, would vote to spend money on almost everything and anything these days.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of NFL news, I just heard Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Yep.
Got released
from the Dolphins.
No longer a Dolphin.
Hey, remember we talked about that trade? AJ Brown for Tyreek.
I think the Jets should sign Tyreek in a heartbeat. It'll be perfect fit for the Jets.
Who's going to throw the ball to him? You?
Yeah.
This is the Jets we're talking about. I can see nothing is.
They don't have a quarterback.
Yeah.
The other thing that I saw just a few minutes ago is the 76ers and the Celtics. That game is going to be on NBC, so it's going to be a national game. And there's rumors that Jason Tatum is coming back for that game.
March 1st, right? Is it March 1st, Gene?
I think so.
Something like that. And Tatum might be back that day?
Well, that's the rumor. He wants to come back on a day that, everyone's going to be watching. But
he should come back when he's ready, unless NBC worked around.
He's doing very well, but I mean, I'm with you, Bob. I personally think he should just probably wait out the season and come back in the next season. But I don't know.
It's hard to make that case. I mean, we don't know how his medical situation really is, of course.
He's checking off all the right boxes.
But the Celtics are the second seed in the East. I mean, that's pretty impressive based on.
Impressive.
Yeah, and if Tatum was 80% and played 10 minutes a game, I'm making this up, that might put him over the top. Who knows? I mean,
you know, gentlemen, I really, you got to question the intelligence of some of the some athletes. Luka Doncic was out with a hamstring strain for four games. I think the Lakers went 2-2. Oh, guess what game he came back for yesterday? The mean nothing but highly hyped media circus that was one of those two round robin games. Luka played yesterday.
What a farce that was.
Well,
that,
I was, round robin thing. Yeah. Well, we, my wife and I were seeing Book of Mormon, so I didn't pay any attention to those games.
I don't really pay attention to any of the games.
Yeah.
I didn't pay attention to it, but the reviews I saw, including an article I'll be sending you guys, tomorrow probably, is that it was better than prior events, which is a very low barrier. I understand. and I didn't watch it either. I probably wouldn't watch something similar because I have a life besides basketball.
Yeah.
But apparently it was better, and the players seemed happier because it was, instead of playing this one game, you know, they play four games. They have to, if they want to win, they have to like play defense once every 10 minutes rather than once every 15 minutes.
Yeah, but it really frosts my donut that Luka was out for four games.
No, that's a really good point, Mitch. I'm sorry. I dropped your headline. You're right. That is crazy.
For this meaningless exhibition game he's playing.
But Mitch, it's your chance to get back into shape.
Can I ask a really dumb question?
Before you do, Gene, Mitch, keep in mind, these weren't really games. Look at the final scores. What, 37-34?
Well, my first thought were these only one half games?
One quarter.
So what would that score? What defense? Huh?
I don't know. Here's my thought though. You know, we're all complaining about that interminable game that the NBA does.
Games.
Can I really ask a dumb question? Why don't they just use that as the All-Star games?
They are.
That's what they do.
What they did yesterday was the substitution for the All-Star game.
That's what the All-Star basketball game has evolved into, this kind of thing.
Yeah. No, but Gene, you're talking about the tournament, aren't you?
Yes, I'm talking about the actual tournament that they throw in November.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's an interesting idea. That's what he's talking about.
More people would actually be interested in watching that than they do this ridiculous, you know, dunk fest, if you will.
1 minute.
Thank you, Trent.
So.
Yeah.
That's actually right now the best
All-Star game right now is baseball by far.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's also a low standard. But that's an interesting thought, Gene.
Peter, that's the one game where the pitching is so good that the games are defensive battles.
They are, and they go pretty quickly too, usually too, which is, you're right.
But I guess
that's an interesting thought, you know, have that playoff or what do they call it? The
NBA Cup or some crazy.
Do that for All-Star Week instead of that stupid, what they do for the, there was a whole trashing of the dunk contest. I don't know if you saw it. I didn't watch that either.
We're out of time. All I can say, Peter, is that cup lasts a month, though, in real time.
But they can have the semifinals and finals during that period of time.
Yeah, that's true, too. So. Gentlemen, we're all set. We can't continue. Our time has run out. Thanks very much for being with us, and thank you for streaming, Brad, and for facilitating Trish. We appreciate that. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. I'm Bob Renko. See you next week.